Hey, good evening, True Seekers. It is 9 o'clock. Thanks to Jeff Farias for the handoff here. Welcome to the commercial-free coverage of Bush's State of the Union, complete with my sarcastic remarks and special Truth Seeker buzzer. Our version of a Bush BS detector. You'll probably hear a lot of it. The plan is whenever Bush says something tonight that is obviously bull, that will happen. All right? I hope you all are ready for this. We have been looking at advance copies of Bush's speech. Also, immediately after the speech, we are going to go to Senator Jim Webb from Virginia for his response, the Democratic Party response, which will be 100 times shorter, much more concise, much more truthful, much more realistic, and much more sensible. So stick around for all of it. As Jeff pointed out, we thank the affiliates down the line for going along with us on this, the commercial-free State of the Union. However, we and the affiliates feel that it is important enough that both the soon-to-be ex-president of the United States and Jim Webb be heard in their entirety here tonight. So an awful lot of thanks to Novam Network for doing this and the affiliates who carry this program across our network. What else we got, Kathy, before we go to this madness? Anything? Little Miss Prozac just came in, did she? Is the First Lady has been wheeled into the chambers here of the United States House of Representatives. All right, let's see what we can hear. Let's bring it up, Kathy. And
Madam Speaker, the Chief Justice and Associate Justices of the Supreme Court.
Oh yeah, this gang. Yeah, these are the people who are going to end a woman's right to privacy as soon as they get a chance. Hey, any of y'all hooked on OxyContin tonight? Hello. Here they come. There's John Roberts. He reminds me, my God, he reminds me of my 8th grade gym teacher. He really does. He's kind of a freak, frankly. But as they enter the chamber, there's Sammy the Fish Alito. Looks like he's wearing a yarmulke. It's actually a bald spot. But maybe it's a yarmulke. I don't know. Is Alito Jewish? No, that's Catholic. Here they come. All right, now if you're watching this on television, I don't know if you can see this from our vantage point. We can certainly see it. Here comes the Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, right in front of her on the floor. We can barely see this. Are snakes, scorpions, and spiders? They are running all through the chamber. Huge twisting snakes. Miss Rice doesn't seem to notice them, but by God, they're there. Roaches running back into the depths of the chamber. Spiders. Somebody better get a can of Raid out or something, a club to... oh, that's awful. My God, it's giving me the chills. Nice shoes, though. She does have nice shoes on. But your Condi, don't step in that. Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, oh. Somebody get her a shoe scraper. Oh. Here come the rest of them. The snakes and spiders have fled. I'm catching the video here on C-SPAN. Awful lot of people leaning over to... oh, they're shaking hands. Is that what they're leaning? I see. Okay. Okay, come on. Who's next? The Joint Chiefs of Staff? What? The cabinet's in. The Supreme Court's in. Who's next? Here comes Gates, all dressed in black suits, white hair. Somebody is wheeling in a huge defibrillator here. I guess that's for Cheney. He's going to be looking out there at an awful lot of Democrats. That's going to be a little bit much. Okay, nobody's doing anything now. What the hell's what's? Come on, come on. Where's Scooter? Hey, Scooter! Where's Louis Libby? Where's Irving? Scooter! Yoo-hoo! Karl Rove's fall guy. Dick Cheney's fall guy, too. We'll probably talk about Irving Libby tomorrow night. All right, the C-SPAN cameras now are focusing on people. It's standing around. Kathy, how do I find... Where's the button here that brings up the solitaire game on the computer? Oh, there he is. There's General Peter Pace, who is, for some reason, trying to hide behind Sammy the Fish Alito. I don't quite understand that, but that's what he's doing. Sammy the Fish is looking pale and peaked. We haven't seen the fish since his confirmation farce, have we? What a guy. Looks just like what the Republican Congress did for the last 12 years. Just they're all shaking hands, smiling, collecting bribes. I see several brown paper bags circulating amongst the crowd here. All on the Republican side, though, oddly enough. Ah, they're putting their hands in and taking out. Oh, I see, I see. I thought maybe it was a collection. No, okay. On the other hand, those may be barf bags. We're not exactly sure here in the southern studios of Nova M Radio. Dick Cheney standing up at the podium now, along with Madam Speaker. Cheney appears to be holding onto his crotch. From our point of view, it looks like he's got a death grip on his... what is it? Oh, no. Oh, I see. His hands are just crossed in front of him. Okay, never mind. I thought he was trying to, you know, pimp the State of the Union address or something. Stand up there.
You like this.
What else is happening here? This is really, really, really boring stuff. People standing around talking as though... I don't know, as though we don't have 130,000 people in Iraq right now struggling to come back alive. And by the way, why is it shocking? Wolf Blitzer said he was shocked today when during the opening statements in the Irving Libby trial, the defense says that Libby was set up to take the fall for Karl Rove and Dick Cheney. Why is that shocking? Wolf Blitzer should know better. He's a member of he's an agent for the Israeli government. He's a member of Mossad. He's a former Washington bureau chief of the Jerusalem Post, and he's the busiest man at CNN. Why would it be a shock, or why would Wolf Blitzer find it difficult to believe, or shocking to believe that Irving Libby was selected to take the fall? And apparently his attorney's not going to let him. And why is it considered a horrific circumstance? I heard this on MSNBC today. When the corpses of five Blackwater employees, the ones shot down in their helicopter over Baghdad today, are discovered to have bullet holes in their heads. What would we do to mercenary killers who were assisting an invading army if we shot down their helicopter over Detroit? I know what Peter Werby and I would do if we were in the area and were armed. We'd run up and put bullets in the heads of the... bastards who are trying to kill our people. That's pretty much what... Why is that horrific circumstances when a mercenary is shot? Oh, Madam Speaker is hitting the podium. All right, let's see what... go, Nancy. Speaker. Oh, yeah? Oh, this is the doorman.
The President of the United States.
Had to step out and take a leak. He'll be here in a minute. Oh, yeah, let's everybody applaud. Goodbye, George. Oh, here it comes down the hallway. What took so long? Did the decider stomp his feet and yell, I don't want to go to that lousy Democrat Congress. Can't make me, can't make me, can't make me. Well, there he goes. Well, I don't understand all the Democrats that are leaning across to... Oh, those are goodbye hugs? Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Once again, the floor is crawling with some kind of slithering-looking creatures. Oh, there's John Boehner right behind him. Be careful. Be careful there, Mr. President. The Boehner is behind you. Be careful. Be careful. Don't back up. Nice blue tie. Yeah, nice blue tie. What the hell, Boehner? Boehner's got... This is not St. Patrick's Day, John. What's he got? He's got a green tie on. My God, he's got little shamrocks on it. Those outfits will look good in prison, won't they? There he is. Shaking. Yeah, that's your Secretary of State. There you go. Here comes Mr. President working his way past the Joint Chiefs. Now, my God, they never introduced the Joint Chiefs. I guess they don't introduce the Joint Chiefs separately. That makes too many people realize that we are moving towards a military dictatorship in this country. There we go. He comes around the far turn. Condi didn't kiss me. Do I need a mint? Here he comes. All right, ladies and gentlemen, hold on to your ass. Big envelope. Yeah, hands one to the Madam Secretary, or Madam Speaker, and one to the killer cyborg. Those are the subpoenas. Ah! There's Laura Bush and that witch, Mrs. Cheney, who wrote that nasty, did you see that column she wrote today? Hi, George. Take a deep breath. There he is, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States. Oh, wait, I'm not supposed to say that. Madam Speaker will say that. All right. Dick Cheney adjusts his pacemaker a little bit, reaches around behind him, makes sure he's plugged in. Sit down, Dick. Let's see, who's up in the VIP section? No dead people. Anybody up there with their arms and legs shot off? Let's see. No, don't see anybody. How about some orphans? You got any orphans up there? No purple fingers tonight, huh? Okay.
Members of Congress, I have the high privilege and the distinct honor of presenting to you the President of the United States.
The sound of 535 people retching at the same time. There it is. Blah!
Blah! Thank you very much. And tonight I have the high privilege and distinct honor of my own as the first president to begin the State of the Union message with these words. Madam Speaker.
There's the first lie. It's not a privilege. It's not a privilege. It's an obligation. There's the first buzzer. Oh, Jesus, is this going to get overworked tonight?
In his day, the late Congressman Thomas D'Alessandro Jr. from Baltimore, Maryland, saw Presidents Roosevelt and Truman at this rostrum. But nothing could compare with the sight of his only daughter, Nancy, presiding tonight as Speaker of the House of Representatives. Congratulations, Madam Speaker. Congratulations.
Look at those Republicans applauding.
Two members of the House and Senate are not with us tonight, and we pray for the recovery and speedy return of Senator Tim Johnson and Congressman Charlie Norwood.
Oh, it's going to be touchy-feely speech. Okay, we pray for the recovery and return. Except for Tim Johnson, we would just assume he retired.
Madam Speaker, Vice President Cheney, members of Congress, distinguished guests, and fellow citizens.
And the subpoena servers.
The rite of custom brings us together at a defining hour when decisions are hard and courage is needed.
To get rid of you, yeah.
We enter the year 2007 with large endeavors underway and others that are ours to begin. In all of this, much is asked of us. We must have the will to face difficult challenges and determined enemies, and the wisdom to face them together. Some in this chamber are new to the House and the Senate, and I congratulate the Democrat majority. Congress has changed, but not our responsibilities. Each of us is guided by our own convictions, and to these we must stay faithful.
Don't say convictions.
Yet we're all held to the same standards.
Well,
and called to serve the same good purposes.
Most of us, George.
To extend this nation's prosperity. To spend the people's money wisely.
Yeah.
To solve problems, not leave them to future generations.
What?
To guard America against all evil. And to keep faith with those we have sent forth to defend us.
Katrina! Hello, Hurricane Katrina! Any help for that part of the world? Katrina!
We're not the first to come here with a government divided and uncertain in the air.
Yeah, Lincoln had the same problem.
Like many before us, we can work through our differences.
Uh-huh.
And we can achieve big things for the American people.
Big things.
Our citizens don't much care which side of the aisle we sit on.
Oh, yes, we do!
As long as we're willing to cross that aisle when there's work to be done.
Yeah, that's happened a lot in the past 6 years, hasn't it, Chuckle Nuts, huh? Oh, yeah, sure.
Our job is to make life better for our fellow Americans
as long as
and to help them build
a
future of hope and opportunity. And this is the business before us tonight. A future of hope and opportunity begins with a growing economy.
For some of us.
And that is what we have.
Yeah.
We're now in the 41st month of uninterrupted job growth. A recovery that has created 7.2 million new jobs.
All at McDonald's.
So far. Unemployment is low. Inflation is low. Wages are rising. This economy is on the move.
Yeah, it sure is.
And our job is to keep it that way, not with more government, but with more enterprise.
Yay! Uh-oh, no Democrats are applauding. What does that mean?
Next week, I'll deliver a full report on the state of our economy.
Oh, good.
Tonight, I want to discuss three economic reforms that deserve to be priorities for this Congress.
How about Katrina?
First, we must balance the federal budget.
Who unbalanced it, you half-wit? Who unbalanced it? Oh, stand up and applaud him, oh, for Christ's sake. Sit down, Democrats.
We can do so without raising taxes.
Yeah, just get rid of you. Yeah.
What we need is spending discipline in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
We set a goal of cutting the deficit in half by 2009 and met that goal 3 years ahead of schedule.
Oh, goody! Of course, I caused the deficit, so, you know.
Let's take the next step. In the coming weeks, I will submit a budget that eliminates the federal deficit within the next 5 years.
Of course, it's going to eliminate all the money for schools and Medicaid and health and human services.
We have to make the same commitment.
Yeah.
Together, we can restrain the spending appetite of the federal government, and we can balance the federal budget.
Yeah. Stop the war in Iraq. Hey, how about Katrina, George? Hey, George.
Next, there's the matter of earmarks.
Earmarks.
These special interest items are often slipped into bills at the last hour.
No. Really?
When not even C-SPAN is watching.
Really?
In 2005 alone, the number of earmarks grew to over 13,000.
All from Republicans.
$18 billion.
Republicans!
Even worse, over 90% of the earmarks never make it to the floor of the House and the Senate. They're dropped into committee reports that are not even part of the bill that arrives on my desk.
Those are Republicans!
You didn't vote them into law. I didn't sign them into law.
Oh, yes, you did.
Yet they are treated as if they have the force of law. The time has come to end this practice.
Kind of like your signing statement, right?
Reform the budget process.
Yeah.
Expose every earmark to the light of day into a vote in Congress, and cut the number and cost of earmarks at least in half by the end of this session.
That's what Nancy Pelosi said we're going to do, you sneak. Where's the buzzer? I want a buzzer. Thank you.
And finally, to keep this economy strong, we must take on the challenge of entitlements.
Okay.
Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid are commitments of conscience. And so it is our duty to keep them permanently sound. Yet we're failing in that duty. And this failure will one day leave our children with three bad options.
Unless we're rich.
Huge tax increases.
Yeah.
Huge deficits.
Yeah.
Or huge and immediate cuts in benefits.
Oh, no. Can't have that.
Everyone in this chamber knows this to be true. Yet somehow we have not found it in ourselves to act.
Oh, my God.
So let us work together and do it now. With enough good sense and goodwill, you and I can fix Medicare and Medicaid and save Social Security.
Yeah, start by ending some of the tax breaks for the wealthy. Huh, George? Where's the buzzer?
Spreading opportunity and hope in America also requires public schools that give children the knowledge and character they need in life.
Yeah, no child left behind.
5 years ago, we rose above partisan differences to pass the No Child Left Behind Act.
How's that going?
Preserving local control. Raising standards.
Local control?
And holding schools accountable for results.
Yeah.
And because we acted, students are performing better in reading and math. Minority students are closing the achievement gap.
Reading and math?
Now the task is to build on the success. Without watering down standards, without taking control from local communities, and without backsliding and calling it reform. We can lift student achievement even higher by giving local leaders flexibility to turn around failing schools. And by giving families with children stuck in failing schools the right to
vouchers!
Choose someplace better.
Vouchers! Here comes the vouchers! Here comes vouchers! Vouchers! Yeah! Vouchers! All right! Christian schools!
We must increase funds for students who struggle and make sure these children get the special help they need.
Like student loans? No, you're cutting those or ending them. What are you talking about?
And we can make sure our children are prepared for the jobs of the future and our country is more competitive by strengthening math and science skills. The No Child Left Behind Act has worked for America's children, and I ask Congress to reauthorize this good law.
Where has it worked, George? Oh, my God.
The future of hope and opportunity requires that all our citizens have affordable and available health care.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. Okay. Tell us about the tax breaks. That'll be real good news for people who can't even afford health insurance, you lying freak. Yeah, more tax breaks. Let's hear it, George. Go ahead.
When it comes to health care, government has an obligation to care for the elderly, the disabled, and poor children. And we will meet those responsibilities. For all other Americans, private health insurance is the best way to meet their needs.
No, it isn't. Single-payer health care is, George.
Many Americans cannot afford a health insurance policy.
So give them a tax
break. And so tonight I propose two new initiatives to help more Americans afford their own insurance.
Tax break.
First, I propose a standard tax deduction for health insurance that will be like the standard tax deduction for dependents. Families with health insurance will pay no income on payroll tax or payroll taxes on $15,000 of their income.
Oh, well, that'll pay for a
week's
worth.
Single Americans with health insurance will pay no income or payroll taxes on $7,500 of their income.
Oh, wow.
With this reform, more than 100 million men, women, and children who are now covered by employer-provided insurance will benefit from lower tax bills.
What does that mean, George?
At the same time, this reform will level the playing field for those who do not get health insurance through their job. For Americans who now purchase health insurance on their own,
yeah,
this proposal would mean a substantial tax savings.
Ah, tax savings.
$4,500 for a family of four making $60,000 a year.
$60,000.
And for the millions of other Americans who have no health insurance at all,
yeah,
this deduction would help put a basic private health insurance plan within their reach.
But not in their
changing
pocket.
The tax code is a vital and necessary step to making health care affordable for more Americans.
Who wrote this crap? Who wrote this? Bush can't even read it correctly. Too many numbers there for his pinhead. What is this?
21,000 divided by 6.
To help the states that are coming up with innovative ways to cover the uninsured.
Yeah, just kill them.
States that make basic private health insurance available to all their citizens,
yeah,
should receive federal funds,
yeah,
to help them provide this coverage to the poor and the sick.
The poor and the sick.
I've asked the Secretary of Health and Human Services to work with Congress to take existing federal funds and use them to create affordable choices grants.
This sounds wonderful.
These grants would give our nation's governors more money and more flexibility to get private health insurance to those most in need.
Oh, shut up.
There are many other ways that Congress can help.
Yeah, there is.
We need to expand health savings accounts.
Pelosi looks like she's just totally befuddled, and Cheney looks like he's ready to eat something. Or someone.
To help small businesses through association health plans.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Let's all sign up. Here's my $5.
We need to reduce costs and medical errors with better information technology.
Oh, yes. Yeah, let's have computers up there. That'll help the poor people. Okay.
We will encourage price transparency.
Ooh, big
and
word.
And protect good doctors from junk lawsuits.
Junk lawsuits!
We need to pass medical liability reform.
That's right! Somebody takes out your kidney when you go in for a heart transplant? Well, accidents happen. No point suing them. It's the same crap he said last year.
And all we do, we must remember that the best health care decisions are not made by government and insurance companies.
No, they're in Canada.
But by patients and their doctors.
Yeah! Canadian doctors and Canadian patients. That's right. Or European. No offense to American doctors. You know what I'm saying.
Extending hope and opportunity in our country requires an immigration system worthy of America.
Oh, yes, okay.
With laws that are fair and borders that are secure.
Yes, indeed.
When laws and borders are routinely violated, this harms the interests of our country.
Really?
To secure our border, we're doubling the size of the Border Patrol and funding new infrastructure and technology.
But we need slaves.
Yet even with all these steps, we cannot fully secure the border unless we take pressure off the border. And that requires a temporary worker program.
Yeah, we need slaves.
We should establish a legal and orderly path for foreign workers to enter our country to work on a temporary basis.
We need slaves. Yeah,
as a result, they won't have to try to sneak in. And that will leave border agents free to chase down drug smugglers.
Drug smugglers.
Criminals.
Criminals.
And terrorists.
Right, terrorists. Hey, where's the buzzer? Thank you. Got to stop those terrorists.
We'll enforce our immigration laws at the work site.
Yeah.
And give employers the tools to verify the legal status of their workers.
Guns and whips.
So there's no excuse left for violating the law.
Oh. Except for the fact that it increases corporation profit margins. Of course, you can't forget that.
We need to uphold the great tradition of the melting pot.
Melting pot?
That welcomes and assimilates new arrivals.
Assimilates. Woo! That boy's talking some big words.
We need to resolve the status of the illegal immigrants who are already in our country without animosity and without amnesty.
We need slaves.
Convictions run deep in this capital when it comes to immigration.
Oh.
Let us have a serious, civil, and conclusive debate.
What about Katrina?
You can pass and I can sign comprehensive immigration reform into law.
And remember, corporate America needs slaves. God damn it! What about Katrina? Katrina?
Extending hope and opportunity depends on a stable supply of energy that keeps America's economy running and America's environment clean.
We need corn.
For too long, our nation has been dependent on foreign oil.
We need corn.
This dependence leaves us more vulnerable to hostile regimes.
like yours.
And to terrorists.
Like you.
Who could cause huge disruptions of oil shipments and raise the price of oil.
Oh.
And do great harm to our economy.
Oh, we don't want that. Oh, Christ.
It's in our vital interest to diversify America's energy supply. The way forward is through technology.
Here comes the burning corn.
We must continue changing the way America generates electric power.
And switchgrass.
By even greater use of clean coal technology.
And hybrid batteries.
Solar and wind energy.
Oh, yeah.
And clean, safe nuclear power.
Nuclear. Yeah, clean and safe. Hasn't been invented yet, chuckle nuts. Get to the corn and the switchgrass.
We press on with battery research for plug-in and hybrid vehicles. And expand the use of clean diesel vehicles and biodiesel fuel.
Switchgrass.
We must
burning corn. Where's the burning corn festival? Here we go.
We must continue investing in new methods of producing ethanol.
There it is. There it is. All right. There you go. Don't forget the switchgrass.
We're using everything from wood chips.
Switchgrass.
To grasses. Agricultural wastes.
Yeah.
We made a lot of progress thanks to good policies here in Washington and the strong response of the market.
The market?
And now even more dramatic advances are within reach. Tonight I ask Congress to join me in pursuing a great goal.
Switchgrass.
Let us build on the work we've done and reduce gasoline usage in the United States by 20% in the next 10 years.
Oh, yeah, that'll happen. Okay. Yeah, stand up, Republicans. Rise. Let us see you. Dawning is the day. It's the same speech. Did Karen Hughes forget to type up a new speech for this guy?
When we do that, we will have cut our total imports by the equivalent of 3/4 of all the oil we now import from the Middle East.
Oh, yay!
To reach this goal, we must increase the supply of alternative fuels by setting a mandatory fuel standard.
Corn!
To require 35 billion gallons of renewable and alternative fuels in 2017. And that is nearly 5 times the current target.
Corn! Will the Saudis let you do this? You better check that out with Ibn bin Saud, bin Saud.
At the same time, we need to reform and modernize fuel economy standards for cars the way we did for light trucks.
What?
And conserve up to 8.5 billion more gallons of gasoline by 2017.
What about Hurricane Katrina?
See, these ambitious goals will dramatically reduce our dependence on foreign oil, but it's not going to eliminate it.
Oh.
And so as we continue to diversify our fuel supply, we must step up domestic oil production in environmentally sensitive ways.
So we're going
to
start
and
drilling.
And to further protect America against severe disruptions to our oil supply.
We're going
to
start drilling in Manhattan.
I ask Congress to double the current capacity of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
Yay! And that drove up oil prices by what? 12% yesterday. Okay.
America's on the verge of technological breakthroughs that will enable us to live our lives less dependent on oil. And these technologies will help us be better stewards of the environment.
Oh, sure.
And they will help us to confront the serious challenge of global climate change.
Global what? Uh-oh. Did you clear this with the pig man? Does Rush Limbaugh know you said global climate change, you smirking halfwit? Look at him. Look at that smirk.
The future of hope and opportunity requires a fair, impartial system of justice.
Oh, here we go.
The lives of our citizens across our nation are affected by the outcome of cases pending in our federal courts.
How about Katrina?
We have a shared obligation to ensure that the federal courts have enough judges to hear those cases and deliver timely rulings.
And all my Nazis.
President, I have a duty to nominate qualified men and women to vacancies on the federal bench. And the United States Senate has a duty as well.
To confirm
give those
all
nominees
the Nazis
a fair hearing.
Yeah.
And a prompt up or down vote on the Senate floor.
Yay! Yay! I got to fire all the lawyers and you got to confirm all the judges. Yeah! Where's the buzzer? Thank you.
For all of us in this room, there's no higher responsibility than to protect the people of this country from danger.
Yay! Oops, sorry.
5 years have come and gone since we saw the scenes and felt the sorrow that the terrorists can cause.
Yeah, but Saddam's dead now, so it's okay.
We've had time to take stock of our situation.
Osama who?
We've added many critical protections to guard the homeland. We know with certainty that the horrors of that September morning were just a glimpse of what the terrorists intend for us.
That's what the Saudis will do. Yeah, we got to bomb Riyadh.
With the distance of time, we find ourselves debating the causes of conflict.
Saudis.
And the course we have followed.
Saudis.
Such debates are essential when a great democracy faces great questions.
What?
And one question has surely been settled.
Who really bombed us?
That to win the war on terror, we must take the fight to the enemy.
So I'm ordering the bombing. I'm ordering the bombing of Saudi Arabia first thing in the morning. And then next on the line is Israel. Well, all right, not Israel.
From the start, America and our allies have protected our people by staying on the offense.
Yeah.
The enemy knows that the days of comfortable sanctuary, easy movement,
have just begun.
Steady financing,
just begun.
And free-flowing communications are long over.
Oh, really? Really?
The terrorist life since 9/11 has never been the same. Our success in this war is often measured by the things that did not happen.
Oh.
We cannot know the full extent of the attacks that we and our allies have prevented. But here's some of what we do know.
Where's Osama?
We stopped an Al-Qaeda plot to fly a hijacked airplane into the tallest building on the West Coast.
Oh, by God, we did.
We broke up a Southeast Asian terror cell grooming operatives for attacks inside the United States.
Yes, we did.
We uncovered an Al-Qaeda cell developing anthrax to be used in attacks against America.
Yeah.
And just last August, British authorities uncovered a plot to blow up passenger planes bound for America over the Atlantic Ocean. For each life saved, we owe a debt of gratitude to the brave public servants who devote their lives to finding the terrorists and stopping them.
Where's Osama? While you're thinking of the answer, what about Hurricane Katrina? Hey, George, where are you going to be on the 27th, this Saturday? Are you going to be around? A couple million people would like to talk to you.
Every success against the terrorists is a reminder of the shoreless ambitions of this enemy.
Where's Osama?
The evil that inspired and rejoiced in 9/11 is still at work in the world.
Where's Osama?
So long as that's the case, America is still a nation at war.
Where's Katrina?
In the mind of the terrorists, this war began well before September the 11th and will not end until their radical vision is fulfilled. And these past 5 years have given us a much clearer view of the nature of this enemy.
Then there you are.
Al-Qaeda and its followers are Sunni extremists, possessed by hatred and commanded by a harsh and narrow ideology.
Sunni extremists?
Take almost any principle of civilization, and their goal is the opposite.
Like the Saudis.
They preach with threats, instruct with bullets and bombs, and promise paradise for the murder of the innocent.
Kind of like Christianity.
Our enemies are quite explicit about their intentions. They want to overthrow moderate governments and establish safe havens from which to plan and carry out new attacks on our country.
Kind of like Saudis.
By killing and terrorizing Americans, they want to force our country to retreat from the world and abandon the cause of liberty.
Kind of like the Saudis.
They would then be free to impose their will and spread their totalitarian ideology. Listen to this warning from the late terrorist Zarqawi.
Dun, 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 dun.
We will sacrifice our blood and bodies to put an end to your dreams. Ooh. And what is coming is even worse.
Oh, God.
Osama bin Laden declared death is better than living on this earth with the unbelievers among us.
Ooh.
These men are not given idle words. And they are just one camp in the Islamist radical movement.
Sounds like Jerry
Falwell. In recent times, it has also become clear that we face an escalating danger from Shia extremists.
Pat Robertson.
Who are just as hostile to America and are also determined to dominate the Middle East. Many are known to take direction from the regime in Iran.
Like Maliki.
Which is funding and arming terrorists like Hezbollah.
I mean Maliki.
A group second only to Al-Qaeda in the American lives it has taken.
Malachi.
The Shia and Sunni extremists are different faces of the same totalitarian threat.
You didn't know that a couple years
Whatever
ago.
Whatever slogans they chant, when they slaughter the innocent, they have the same wicked purposes. They want to kill Americans, kill democracy in the Middle East.
Evildoers.
And gain the weapons to kill on an even more horrific scale.
Evildoers.
In the 6 years since our nation was attacked, I wish I could report to you that the dangers had ended. They have not.
They've gotten worse.
And so it remains the policy of this government to use every lawful and proper tool of intelligence, diplomacy,
how's that working?
Law enforcement, and military action to do our duty to find these enemies and to protect the American people.
Where's Osama? Of course, the world is much more dangerous now, chuckle nuts, since you've been around, huh? Oh, look at Trent, a lot applauding. Yeah, okay, Trent.
This war is more than a clash of arms.
It's a prophet.
It is a decisive ideological struggle. And the security of our nation is in the balance. To prevail, we must remove the conditions that inspire blind hatred and drove 19 men to get onto airplanes and to come and kill us.
They're Saudis. They're all Saudis.
What every terrorist fears most is human freedom. Societies where men and women make their own choices, answer to their own conscience, and live by their hopes instead of their resentments.
Like Canada.
Free people are not drawn to violent and malignant ideologies. And most will choose a better way when they're given a chance.
Like Canada.
So we advance our own security interests by helping moderates and reformers and brave voices for democracy.
Like the Saudis.
The great question of our day is whether America will help men and women in the Middle East to build free societies and share in the rights of all humanity. And I say, for the sake of our own security, we must.
Yeah, let's start with Egypt, and then Jordan, and then Kuwait, and then Saudi Arabia. Oh, and the UAE. Let's get those too for your democratic ideas in the Middle East. Okay, how about that? Huh? Okay.
In the last 2 years, we've seen the desire for liberty in the broader Middle East. And we have been sobered by the enemy's fierce reaction. 2005, the world watched as the citizens of Lebanon raised the banner of the Cedar Revolution.
And took care of that quickly.
They drove out the Syrian occupiers and chose new leaders in free elections.
And then the Israeli occupiers came in.
In 2005, the people of Afghanistan defied the terrorists
for a couple
and elected
of weeks.
A democratic legislature.
How's that going?
And in 2005, the Iraqi people held three national elections.
Oh, yay.
Choosing a transitional government, adopting the most progressive democratic constitution in the Arab world.
For corporations.
And then electing a government under that constitution.
Woohoo!
Despite endless threats from the killers in their midst, nearly 12 million Iraqi citizens came out to vote in a show of hope and solidarity that we should never forget.
That was that purple finger thing, right?
A thinking enemy. A thinking enemy watched all these scenes.
And laughed.
Adjusted their tactics.
Yeah.
And in 2006, they struck back.
And started killing everybody.
In Lebanon, assassins took the life of Pierre Jamael, a prominent participant in the Cedar Revolution.
What?
Hezbollah terrorists with support from Syria and Iran sowed conflict in the region and are seeking to undermine Lebanon's legitimately elected government.
Tell us about Blackwater.
In Afghanistan, Taliban and Al-Qaeda fighters tried to regain power by regrouping and engaging Afghan and NATO forces.
It's going pretty good, too, isn't it?
In Iraq, Al-Qaeda and other Sunni extremists blew up one of the most sacred places in Shia Islam.
The headquarters of Kellogg Brown and
Root. The Mosque of Samarra. This atrocity, directed at a Muslim house of prayer,
was designed
to provoke retaliation from Iraqi Shia.
Yeah.
And it succeeded. Radical Shia elements, some of whom received support from Iran, formed death squads.
Oh.
The result was a tragic escalation of sectarian rage and reprisal that continues to this day. This is not the fight we entered in Iraq, but it is the fight we are in. Every one of us wishes this war were over and won. Yet it would not be like us to leave our promises unkept, our friends abandoned, and our own security at risk.
And Halliburton still has money to make. And as far as the death squads, I want to thank John Negroponte. He did a good job for me.
On this day, at this hour, it is still within our power to shape the outcome of this battle. Let us find our resolve and turn events toward victory.
And let's use nukes! God damn it, let's nuke them! I say bomb the hell out of them! Nuke them! More troops!
I want some depleted uranium. I want megaton bombs. Don't worry. The Israelis will do it for us. They'll never know it was us.
We're carrying out a new strategy in Iraq, a plan that demands more from Iraq's elected government and gives our forces in Iraq the reinforcements they need to complete their mission.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Our goal is a democratic Iraq that upholds the rule of law.
And the oil companies.
Respects the rights of its people.
And the oil companies.
Provides them security.
And the oil companies.
And is an ally in the war on terror.
And the oil companies.
In order to make progress toward this goal, the Iraqi government must stop the sectarian violence in its capital.
And the oil companies.
But the Iraqis are not yet ready to do this on their own.
And the oil companies.
So we're deploying reinforcements of more than 20,000 additional soldiers and Marines to Iraq. The vast majority will go to Baghdad, where they will help Iraqi forces to clear and secure neighborhoods.
Oh, that'll work.
And serve as advisors embedded in Iraqi army units.
Oh, God.
With Iraqis in the lead, our forces will help secure the city by chasing down the terrorists, insurgents.
It's not a game of tag. It's not a game of tag.
In an Anbar province, where Al-Qaeda terrorists have gathered and local forces have begun showing a willingness to fight them. We're sending an additional 4,000 United States Marines with orders to find the terrorists and clear them out.
This will be just another one of your roaring successes, right, George? Surge number 5, we're calling this.
We didn't drive Al-Qaeda out of their safe haven in Afghanistan, only to let them set up a new safe haven in a free Iraq.
In Detroit.
People of Iraq want to live in peace, and now it's time for their government to act. Iraq's leaders know that our commitment is not open-ended. They have promised to deploy more of their own troops to secure Baghdad.
Oh, yeah.
And they must do so.
Yeah.
They pledge that they will confront violent radicals of any faction or political party.
Including the U.S.
And they need to follow through and lift needless restrictions on Iraqi and coalition forces so these troops can achieve their mission of bringing security to all of the people of Baghdad.
No more restrictions on torture.
Iraqi leaders have committed themselves to a series of benchmarks to achieve reconciliation. To share oil revenues among all Iraq citizens.
Yeah.
Put the wealth of Iraq into the rebuilding of Iraq.
Yeah.
To allow more Iraqis to reenter their nation's civic life. To hold local elections. And to take responsibility for security in every Iraqi province.
How about Katrina?
But for all this to happen, Baghdad must be secure. And our plan will help the Iraqi government take back its capital and make good on its commitments. My fellow citizens, our military commanders and I have carefully weighed the options.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah,
discussed every possible approach.
Discussed it all.
In the end, I chose this course of action because it provides the best chance for success. Many in this chamber understand that America must not fail in Iraq. Because you understand that the consequences of failure would be grievous and far-reaching.
They'll be on the streets of Detroit.
If American forces step back before Baghdad is secure, the Iraqi government would be overrun by extremists on all sides.
And they'll be on the streets of Detroit.
We could expect an epic battle between Shia extremists backed by Iran.
And they'll be on the streets of Detroit.
And Sunni extremists aided by Al-Qaeda and supporters of the old regime.
Detroit.
A contagion of violence could spill out across the country.
Cleveland.
And in time, the entire region could be drawn into the conflict.
Denver.
For America, this is a nightmare scenario.
We'll never get the oil.
For the enemy, this is the objective.
El Paso.
Chaos is the greatest ally, their greatest ally in this struggle.
Miami.
And out of chaos in Iraq would emerge an emboldened enemy with new safe havens.
Bluffton, South Carolina.
New recruits.
Small town over.
New resources. And an even greater determination to harm America. To allow this to happen would be to ignore the lessons of September the 11th and invite tragedy.
Saudis did that.
Ladies and gentlemen, nothing is more important at this moment in our history than for America to succeed in the Middle East, to succeed in Iraq, and to spare the American people from this danger.
And get the oil! Get the oil! Hey, how about Katrina, George? Hurricane, floods.
This is where matters stand tonight, in the here and now.
The where?
I've spoken with many of you in person.
Yeah.
I respect you and the arguments you've made.
But I'm not going to listen.
We went into this largely united in our assumptions and in our convictions.
Not anymore.
And whatever you voted for, you did not vote for failure. Our country is pursuing a new strategy in Iraq, and I ask you to give it a chance to work.
Oh, okay, sure.
And I ask you to support our troops in the field and those on their way.
Yay! 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 Support the troops! All right, troops! Yeah, I knew that'd get all you standing up, you dumb puppet asses. Yeah, support the troops. That's a good applause line. How about you Democrats? You going to support the troops, huh? Look at that smirk. Look at that smirk.
The war on terror we fight today is a generational struggle that will continue long after you and I have turned our duties over to others.
The Saudis.
And that's why it's important to work together so our nation can see this great effort through.
The Saudis.
Both parties and both branches should work in close consultation. So I've proposed to establish a special advisory council on the war on terror, made up of leaders in Congress from both political parties.
And you won't listen to them either.
We will share ideas for how to position America to meet every challenge that confronts us. We'll show our enemies abroad that we're united in the goal of victory.
Ollie North is going to head it.
And one of the first steps we can take together is to add to the ranks of our military.
My daughters are joining up.
So that the American armed forces are ready for all the challenges ahead.
And Sean Hannity's signing up. And I'm going to put Henry Kissinger in charge of this one.
I ask the Congress to authorize an increase in the size of our active Army and Marine Corps by 92,000 in the next 5 years.
Oh, more death! Now, this sort of ties in with my plan about amnesty for guest workers. You see, we'll just give them citizenship if they go die.
Second task we can take on together is to design and establish a volunteer civilian reserve corps.
Katrina!
Such a corps would function much like our military reserve.
Katrina!
Would ease the burden on the armed forces by allowing us to hire civilians with critical skills to serve on missions abroad when America needs them.
Like Blackwater.
We'd give people across America who do not wear the uniform a chance to serve in the defining struggle of our time.
Like the mafia.
Americans can have confidence in the outcome of this struggle because we're not in this struggle alone. We have a diplomatic strategy that is rallying the world to join in the fight against extremism.
And nobody's joining.
In Iraq, multinational forces are operating under a mandate from the United Nations.
Multinational?
We're working with Jordan and Saudi Arabia and Egypt and the Gulf states to increase support for Iraq's government.
The real terrorists.
The United Nations has imposed sanctions on Iran and made it clear that the world will not allow the regime in Tehran to acquire nuclear weapons.
Yay! Those goddamn Iranians, we overthrew their government once. Jesus Christ, we have to do it again?
Other members of the quartet, the UN, the EU, and Russia were pursuing diplomacy to help bring peace to the Holy Land.
What?
And pursuing the establishment of a democratic Palestinian state living side by side with Israel in peace and security.
Oh, yeah, that'll happen. Yeah.
In Afghanistan, NATO has taken the lead in turning back the Taliban and Al-Qaeda offensive.
They're opening schools.
The first time the alliance has deployed forces outside the North Atlantic area.
Opium is way up.
Together with our partners in China and Japan, Russia and South Korea, we're pursuing intensive diplomacy to achieve a Korean peninsula free of nuclear weapons.
Well, everything's okay then, right? Everything's okay. Oh, by the way, what the Chinese did the other day. Oh, never mind.
And we'll continue to speak out for the cause of freedom in places like Cuba.
Cuba?
Belarus and Burma.
Burma?
And continue to awaken the conscience of the world to save the people of Darfur.
Oh, yeah. Like we're really concentrating on Darfur, aren't we? Huh? Who's been paying for all those full-page ads in the New York Times, chuckle nuts? You?
American foreign policy is more than a matter of war and diplomacy.
Yeah?
Our work in the world is also based on a timeless truth. To whom much is given, much is required.
It's hard to say, isn't it?
Yeah. We hear the call to take on the challenges of hunger, and poverty and disease.
How about AIDS?
This is precisely what America is doing.
How about AIDS in Africa?
We must continue to fight HIV/AIDS, especially on the continent of Africa.
Yeah, there we go.
That one always gets a lot of applause. Darfur now, and AIDS in Africa. That's good. We throw that out to the Negroes here in the audience tonight.
Because you funded the emergency plan for AIDS relief.
Yeah?
The number of people receiving life-saving drugs has grown from 50,000 to more than 800,000 in 3 short years.
Wow.
I ask you to continue funding our efforts to fight HIV/AIDS. And I ask you to provide $1.2 billion over 5 years so we can combat malaria in 15 African countries.
How about malaria down on the Mississippi Gulf Coast? Katrina! Any money for Katrina victims?
I ask that you fund the Millennium Challenge account so that American aid reaches the people who need it in nations where democracy is on the rise and corruption is in retreat.
Like Mississippi.
And let us continue to support the expanded trade and debt relief.
Like in Louisiana.
That are the best hope for lifting lives and eliminating poverty. When America serves others in this way, we show the strength and generosity of our country.
Osama bin Laden.
These deeds reflect the character of our people. The greatest strength we have is the heroic kindness and courage and self-sacrifice of the American people.
Not my people, the American people.
You see
people,
this spirit yeah. often if you know where to look.
Yeah.
And tonight, we need only look above to the gallery.
Oh, here we go.
Dikembe Mutombo grew up in Africa amid great poverty and disease.
You want to try that name again there?
He came to Georgetown University on a scholarship to study medicine. Coach John Thompson took a look at Dikembe
and made him
had a different idea.
Player. Yeah, hey.
Dikembe became a star in the NBA and a citizen of the United States. But he never forgot the land of his birth or the duty to share his blessings with others. He built a brand new hospital in his old hometown.
Aww.
A friend has said of this good-hearted man, Mutombo believes that God has given him this opportunity to do great things.
Play basketball?
And we're proud to call this son of the Congo
Watch out.
A citizen of the United States of America.
Hi-yah! Hi-yah! Look at Pickles there. If that's not a woman on Prozac, I don't know. That guy isn't tall. We got to take a break here? Oh, no! Oh, that was our promise. All right, we'll come back right after the break. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy.
After her daughter was born, Julie Eigner Clark searched for ways to share her love of music and art with her child.
Oh, wait,
so
we're not taking a break.
She borrowed some equipment and began filming children's videos in her basement. The Baby Einstein Company was born, and in just 5 years, her business grew to more than $20 million in sales.
Woo, look, who is
November
that?
2001, Julie sold Baby Einstein to Walt Disney Company, and with her help, Baby Einstein has grown into a $200 million business.
Molly watches that, doesn't she?
Julie represents the great enterprising spirit of America. And she's using her success to help others.
She's hot, too.
Producing child safety videos with John Walsh of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Julie says of her new project, I believe it is the most important thing I have ever done. I believe that children have the right to live in a world that is safe. And so tonight, we are pleased to welcome this talented business entrepreneur and generous social entrepreneur, Julie Eigner Clark.
Who will get a hefty tax break so she can afford health insurance. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry, wrong page of my speech.
Three weeks ago, Wesley Autry was waiting at a Harlem subway station with his two little girls when he saw a man fall into the path of a train. With seconds to act, Wesley jumped onto the tracks.
All right, we're going to break. We'll be back.
Pulled the man into the space
between
the rails.
Stick around. Welcome back. Well, we only missed the last part of it. You didn't need to hear the last part of it anyway. Jeez. All right, we're waiting for the slap and tickle part to end as Bush makes his way out the door. And we are going to carry as much of Jim Webb's response as we can. We appreciate the fact that the affiliates that carry this program set aside all the commercials for an hour. Jesus, that's unheard of. And rightly so. I mean, it's just that's the way radio works, right? But so we're not going to, we did not ask them to do the same thing with the response from Jim Webb from the Democratic side of the aisle. And I wish these people would stop saying the Democrat Party. It's not the Democrat Party. It's the Democratic Party. Jesus. What a bunch of crapo, I swear to God. I can't believe, I mean, what did he mention Katrina or the U.S. Gulf Coast even once? No, he didn't. Not a word. Burning corn. Jesus. All right. Kathy, what are we waiting for? We're waiting for... All right, let's take a call. We're waiting. Let's start with Matthew in Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike. Oh, man. After that speech, I think I just... I don't have a word to describe what I'm feeling. I think the only thing I do have is an onomatopoeia, something like...
Yeah, be careful now.
I know. I won't say anything. Don't worry.
Okay.
But I guess it was just kind of weird for me seeing Bush and then seeing somebody who I once regarded as an arch liberal, which is a good thing, Nancy Pelosi behind him, and I was just kind of half wanting her to just jump out in front of him and say, "Shut up!" But then again, it seems like after the stuff she said recently, I will never see that coming out of her ever, unless a miracle happens anyway. But, I was watching the speech on KERA because there's no chance in anything I'm watching it on any other station. But I'm just curious to know, do you think this is going to probably regard the polls now, but the fact that he didn't mention Katrina in all of this, and I think, I mean, any other man would, but the fact that he didn't mention Katrina, do you think this will have any reverse effect on how the nation views him?
I think, given the horrendous failure of government and media to respond, the only people that are responding to the tragedy on the Mississippi Gulf Coast are dedicated church groups, some human rights organizations, people like Sarge, some efforts by private individuals or companies like Nova M, Head On Radio, and the fact that it has fallen off the radar. It's fallen off television. Nobody writes about it anymore. The government doesn't give a damn. Bush couldn't care less. His filthy lies when he was in Jackson Square a year ago just, in my mind, just reverberate all around the country. But the problem, once again, is that 80% of people get 90% of their news from television in this country, and there's not a mention of Katrina. Nothing. The next time you hear anything about Katrina will be maybe when hurricane season starts in May. So I don't know that there's going to be a backlash about the fact that he didn't even mention Katrina or the disaster or the fact that one of America's great cities has been reduced to absolutely a third of what it used to be. That people in the state of Mississippi can't even still can't get medical care, can't get jobs, can't get food, can't get shelter. This is horrifying. So I don't know what the reaction is going to be. I really don't, Matthew. I have no idea.
Well, at least we're talking about it. At least we are. At least you are. You're getting your voice out there. At least a couple people on progressive radio shows are talking about it. So, I mean, at least it isn't completely silent.
Yeah, not completely. Hey, listen, Matthew, let me move on. Thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care, okay? Okay. Other than the Katrina disrespect, this speech is just like his New Way Forward plan, the same old crap. Meet the new speech, same as the old speech. Meet the new surge, same as the old surge. Well, there's that new embedding part that'll really stack the bodies up to Jesus. Yeah, if you want a good commentary on what should have happened tonight, go to tvnewslies.org. Reggie has written something entitled "There Should Have Been Silence." TVNewsLies.org on the blog page and read what Reg wrote. Just a couple of sentences here. Tonight, George W. Bush was cheered and applauded by members of Congress as he approached the dais to present his sixth State of the Union address. He was applauded regularly throughout the address to the nation. That response was an unforgivable yet predictable disgrace. The members of Congress applauded the words of their failed and incompetent leader. They applauded when there should have been total silence. Go to tvnewslies.org and go to the blog page and read what Reg has written, because it's quick, it cuts right to your heart, and it's absolutely true. Man, this is just, I don't know, is this supposed to jack up his poll numbers now? Remember, he never reads polls. Is this supposed to jack up his poll numbers? Is this supposed to make us forget that 27 Americans were killed the other day, over the weekend, that 200 or 300 Iraqis have died in the same period of time, that more Americans are going to be sent into this meat grinder, that the victims of Katrina are still just barely treading water. When he talks about the surging economy, don't you just want to scream? Don't you just... I don't know. Let's take another call here. Sharon is calling from Tucson. Sharon, welcome to the program. Hey, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Am I with Mike?
Yes, you are. Welcome to the program.
Oh, Mike, I'm in Tucson. I just watched that pathetic situation. And Nancy Pelosi, can't they just stand up for once? For just stand up and just say no. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I was so hurt. I mean, we have suffered. Soldiers are dying. Our economy's in the toilet. Nobody has health insurance. Jobs are gone. And they give this man a hand clap.
I know.
I can see the sorry, pathetic Republicans. But those Democrats, you know, I don't know. Where are we going?
Well, in fairness, I don't know where you were watching. I was kind of watching on C-SPAN.
I was listening to you, and I was watching at the same time. You got me through it.
A lot of the Democrats were not applauding this liar, this killer, this sneak, this coward. I guess there's still the attitude that, on some level, there should be respect shown for the office, although the Republicans don't show the respect. But Republicans are not about respect. They're about rape and murder and pillage and death and destruction and anti-life, and they hate America. So I think the Democrats did the best they could at the same, you know, trying to do two things at once, show respect for the office and not to encourage this freak to more of his madness. But I'll tell you what, from the channel I was watching, the camera was on this guy's face a lot. Did you see the smirks on his face?
Yes.
He would say things and look out into the audience with this little boy smirk, like some sixth grader hoping that the teacher is going to say, "Oh, good boy, you did a good book report." That's just infuriating to me.
You know, I just looked at it like he's a king and he's owed that.
Yeah,
and he's not owed anything except for impeachment and imprisonment.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can see in this dude.
I hear you.
You know, this Oh, God, Mike. Sharon, I don't know.
Sharon, I got to leave it there. I'm glad you called in, though. Call back, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, you take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Was gone so fast, divided, not united. What's he want to do now? What's he going to try? Does he really think Armageddon is nigh? Does he care if children die? La, 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
And humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Senator Webb is talking right now. We are going to play his what he's saying in its entirety either this hour or next hour. We're recording it now. I think it's only 8 minutes long, and that means we can we have a couple of segments that are at least that long. So we will have the entire Jim Webb speech or response to this madman a little bit later in the program tonight. Marilyn in Jacksonville emails in, Mike, can you believe he talks the talk about fossil fuels when we know that the surge is all about protecting the oil rights in Iraq for Exxon, Shell, and the Carlyle Group? That is if he can get Maliki to come through, otherwise he'll get a bullet. And the Democrats never open their mouths about this, even very few of the left gatekeepers, as if obtaining oil at any cost is okay. Yeah, when he I think what Marilyn means is, you know, when he talks about alternative fuels, like, they are as interested in that as I'm interested in getting a bad case of bleeding athlete's foot. The whole game is about oil. And to see, you know, this administration talk about alternative fuels or burning switchgrass or windmill power, it's just laughable. It's a joke. And yet he keeps it up, doesn't he? Every one of these filthy State of the Union addresses has always been the same. Every time he's out campaigning during a congressional election, off-year election, or a presidential a year, this turkey has been out there talking about switchgrass and burning corn and biodiesel. These people are no more interested in alternative forms of energy than, what did I just say? That I am interested in getting bloody athlete's foot. Let's go to some more calls. Will is calling from Michigan. Hey, Will. Hey, Will.
Hey, Mike. You know, for once, I'd like to hear Congress sound like the House of Commons.
Oh, screaming back at him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would too.
I couldn't help but fantasize about Nancy Pelosi pulling out an axe and whacking Bush and Cheney while they were sitting right there next to her.
Yeah. All right. Is that all you got tonight?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got the bus full. We don't have any more seats left.
Okay. Well, that's good. If I don't make it there, we may participate in whatever demonstrations are available here in Atlanta. But I'll be watching for you on television, okay?
All right.
All right. Take care, Will.
See ya.
All right. Blaine is calling from Canada. Blaine, welcome to the program. Hey, Blaine.
Oh, hey, Mike. How are you this evening?
Doing fine.
I'm calling from Canada. I'm calling from British Columbia. I'm northeast of Vancouver, B.C., in a very mountainous region, trying to make my way home here. I listen to you on satellite.
Wow.
And I just can't.
You listen on Sirius?
You betcha.
Oh, great, great.
Anyways, I can't believe that people actually buy that drivel. You know, I particularly just the bit about the health care and enabling people to buy their health care services. You might as well been telling people, you know, that it's going to help them to buy fire protection or buy police services.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, they were talking about people's health care,
I know.
And talking about using alternative fuels coming from a guy who was a failed oil baron. I mean, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, people outside the United States are taking notice of this guy. And I definitely applaud you and the other hosts on Air America and the other networks that are trying to educate the people down there, because they seem to have blinders on. They seem to be a bunch of sheep or lemmings that'll follow them right off a cliff.
Well, not so much anymore. I think after 6 years of this monster and 12 years of failed, filthy Republican leadership, the majority of the American people are starting to realize what we've allowed happen. Now, whether or not there's time to pull back from the brink remains to be seen. But on every single issue now, I don't care what the issue is, even the lies that Bush tried to tell about he's going to protect the American people. The American people don't believe him anymore. By majorities, they don't believe him. Some of them by 2-1, 3-1, 4-1. The problem here is, while most of us who have not been forced to forget or put to sleep by television over the past 6, 7, 8, 10 years, most of us who have been screaming about this sick bastard and this filthy Republican Party, we're in such a minority that nothing happened. Sometimes it takes a war and unending death until people start to realize what lies they've been told. Blaine, drive safely, okay?
Will do, Mike. Thanks. Appreciate you taking my call tonight.
Yes, sir.
Take care.
Thank you for calling. We'll be back after the break, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Before the hour. I think the way it's going to work, our production crew in Phoenix is going to pull Jim Webb's speech, Senator Webb's speech, and then we will play it for you probably next hour. I'm sure most people heard it live as he was giving it, but we think it's important enough that we're going to play it on the program, too. So you'll have a second chance to hear it if you choose. Back to your phone calls right now. Sarge is calling from Mississippi. Sarge, this must have been a very disappointing State of the Union speech for you, pal.
Oh, well, you know, I didn't I hear her? Yeah, I'm real interested in what's going on in Jackson County and Hancock and all over the Mississippi and Louisiana coast, and I'm going to assign an aide to it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait a minute. That was my call with Dennis Kucinich.
That's
I'm
right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I got confused.
Yeah, not the president.
Yeah, well, I did actually talk to Dennis Kucinich today. And
really?
He is going to look into it, and I'm expecting a call from one of his staffers tomorrow, and the staffer is going to report directly to Dennis.
That's great. That's great.
Thank God for people like Dennis. But
And people in Mississippi, thank God for people like Sarge.
Jim Yancey, maybe.
All of y'all, everybody. And the people who are coming from isolated outposts in the desert to come and help you, too.
Well, you know, I really am not alone. There's Loki. I mean, let's not forget Loki. He's a tremendous voice, and I still communicate with him. And I'm just as interested in New Orleans as I am the Mississippi coast, although the Mississippi coast is more of a matter that I focus on. Ray Hinckley focuses on New Orleans for unreportednews.net. So there's a lot of us working. You know, the one thing that I just really couldn't get over was how he sat there and he talked about No Child Left Behind being such a wonderful thing, when here in Mississippi alone, we're losing over $1 billion a year because of that stupid program. And it's due to the poverty rate in Mississippi. Now, that is stupid when you're penalized. your education system for poverty.
Well, you know, and I think most people with a brain know, that this No Child Left Behind is a scam. It's to force the collapse of the public school system so they can come out with their damn religious school vouchers and send people in to learn that the universe is only 6,000 years old. You know, when Bush talks about education, it's like when he talks about anything else. You know he's lying through his teeth as soon as he opens his mouth.
And then how dare him mention about the oil when he and his bunch of thugs in the Republican Party has allowed drilling in the Louisiana marshes all on the barrier islands around Mississippi and Louisiana. And that Mississippi Sound protects us during hurricanes. It protects species of fish and other things. And yet now they have authorized drilling in these areas, and all it's going to do is it's going to produce very little oil compared to what they need. And it's just going to make hurricane problems even worse. I mean, what's wrong with these idiots?
They're Republicans.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. But by the way, I am a member of the Founders Club.
Oh, great. Well, thanks.
I couldn't afford but the monthly deal. And
hey, that's okay. And again, I haven't had a chance to mention yet tonight. Thanks, Sarge, for bringing that up. But the Founders Club, what he's talking about, if you weren't here last night, NovaMradio.com, if you go to the website, you can sign up for $100 a year or $9.95 or whatever it is, just under $10, a penny under $10 a month, not to hear a program live. You can always hear live streaming or on the radio or on Sirius. We're talking about the Founders Club, and go to the website. You'll see what you get. The podcasts now are included in that. There are no more free podcasts. I got some emails today, Sarge, people kicking my ass over that.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. Like I subscribe to the New York Times and I have to pay for it. I would love to get it free because I'm in the media just like they're in the media. But when I suggested that to them, their subscription people kind of laughed and they said, well, we can give you a discount. It's not much, but we'll give you a discount, but you got to pay. And that's just the way it goes. I don't know what to say.
You know, the only problem I have with it, I wish they had just given us a little bit more notice, because there's one woman in Germany that I know of who would be glad to donate, but she had already donated every extra penny she had to Jim Yancey, and so for a month she can't even listen to it because she didn't know in time. So, you know, that's the bad thing. But other than that, that's the only gripe I got.
Yeah, I think it'll work out, because what Nova M is putting this out for, $10 a month, is it's got to be affordable. I broke it down the other night to just between Mike Newcomb and me, it's about 25 cents a program.
If I can afford it, Mike, anybody can, because I live on less than $575 a month.
So if I can afford
it, buddy, anybody can.
That's true. All right, well, Sarge, listen, stay in touch, as always.
Thank you, buddy.
All Bye-bye. Right, sir, take care. Yeah, the Nova M, NovaMradio.com, the people who put this together are determined for this network to be a success, to grow, and in order for that to happen, it's going to take the support of people. I can remember when I got fired from Air America. I'm just talking about me now. There's more people involved in this network than me. But I have to approach it from my own experience. We had 20,000 people sign an online petition asking Air America to put me back on the air, which, of course, I wouldn't have gone back. There's no way in hell. Once you go through something like that, like what Kathy and I went through, you don't go back. You go forward. And Nova M was going forward. But the point is, you know, 20,000 people signed a petition, and I'm just asking for a lot of those people who signed that petition to go to NovaMradio.com and sign up, because a lot of you folks said, you know, God, I'd spend a dollar a day to hear Malloy's program. You don't have to spend that. It works out to $10 a month. And if we do, we're on 20, what are we on, 20 days a month, Kathy, roughly, $10 a month. What is it, 50 cents? 50 cents a show. And that's not that's not if you want to listen live. You want to listen live via the internet or Sirius satellite radio or the radio station that carries it is free. It always will be free. But this is for the podcast, the downloads, everything that's involved other than live listening. And every single program or network does this now. It's just a matter of survival. That's what it's come down to. You know, it's not free to podcast. It's not cheap. Nova M has to spend a certain amount of money. So all they're asking is for the founders, the people who want to get involved in this at this point in Nova M's history. And we're right there. This is the way you can do it. And again, remember, once they have 5,000 founders, they're going to take all the people who are in that group, that first group of 5,000 founders, and there's going to be a drawing. I wish I could get in on that. But the winner is going to get 10 grand. And in addition, as a founding member, you'll get all sorts of advantages in the future through Nova M, like VIP access to personal appearances or author events that might be made in your city, discount Nova M merchandise, signed stuff from people like me or Dr. Mike or any future host that comes on this network. So it's an investment in the kind of talk radio that you'll hear on this network. I don't know what's going to happen to Air America. I hope Air America survives. I hope every single liberal or progressive talk show host, well, with one or two exceptions, survives. I really do. We've got to have this communications network. But I'll guarantee you the ones that are going to survive with their integrity intact and their independence intact are the ones that are, to some degree, listener supported. That's just the way it goes, truth seekers. That's just the way it goes. So go to novamradio.com as soon as you can, okay, and sign up. We're asking you to do this very sincerely, but it's not a charitable thing. We're not looking for a charitable move on your part. This is a business transaction between you and Nova M Radio. So $100 a year or $9.99 a month, whatever that monthly charge is, that gets you a couple of months free if you go the yearly route. So do it, okay? Okay. Back to the phone calls. Blake is calling from Texas. Blake, welcome to the program.
Mike, Blake, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing fine. Listen, just wanted to hear maybe your top 3 to 5 points on why you think the economy is not doing good. You said earlier that it makes
bankruptcy,
you want to scream.
Bankruptcies are up. People are the savings rates in this country are now on a negative basis. They're below zero. People have been living on home equity, cashing in equity, which is a very foolish thing to do. Jobs, manufacturing jobs, the kinds of jobs where one person working can support a family, have been disappeared and sent overseas. The jobs that Bush talked about tonight that have been created are $10, $12, $14 an hour jobs. Hold on a second. I got a break here. I'll come back and see if I can answer some more for you, Blake. Stay right where you are. I'm going to put you on hold. This is Nova M. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, we're talking with Blake in Texas. All right, Blake, you asked me a question before the break. Let me just a quote from what Jim Webb said. He says, when one looks at the health of our economy, it's almost as if we're living in two different countries. Some say things have never been better. The stock market's at an all-time high, and so are corporate profits, but these benefits are not being fairly shared. When I graduated from college, the average CEO made 20 times what the average worker did. Today, it's nearly 400 times. In other words, it takes the average worker more than a year to make the money that his or her boss makes in one day. Wages and salaries for our workers are at an all-time low as a percentage of national wealth.
Even though the productivity of American workers is the highest in the world, medical costs have skyrocketed, college tuition rates are off the charts, our manufacturing base is being dismantled and sent overseas, and he goes on. So I wouldn't think you would have any questions about that unless you're in the top 5% of wage earner, are you?
Am I still on the line, Mike?
Yeah.
Yes, I am. But I also, manage money for a living. And, the overall, from the way we look at the economy, we are enjoying a very fruitful economy.
Who is? Didn't you just hear anything I said?
No, I did. You spoke, and now I'm just responding.
But you're responding. You're responding nonsense. You're spitting out nonsense.
Okay, listen.
For the top 5, 6, 7% of people in this country, in terms of wages, it's been a hell of a good ride. For the other 90%, it's not been. Don't you get that?
Let me finish. Not all of my clients are in the top 5%. And, a lot of my clients' total household income has been less than $40,000 their whole life.
Well, what's your point?
Well, they saved their money, and they...
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What is your point? You're telling me about your...
What you said before the break, you were talking about bankruptcies and low savings, and what you're talking about is bad financial management on a personal level.
Oh, really? Well, how do you manage finances if you don't have money coming in?
And how do you not have money coming in with unemployment?
Oh, Jesus Christ! Get rid of this guy, Kathy, quick, before I say something nasty on the air. I don't call me that kind of gibberish, okay? Holy Christ! What's the guy? What did he say? He's a money manager? What does that mean? He doesn't make anything. He doesn't manufacture anything. He doesn't produce anything. He's a parasite. I try to point out what Webb pointed out. American jobs overseas. The poverty rate is up. Children living in poverty in this country is at an all-time high. Huge federal deficit where we had a surplus when this pig stole the election from Al Gore. As Jim Webb said, the income inequality in the U.S. is shameful. The banking companies are cleaning up on these interest-free mortgages, forcing Americans into bankruptcy in record numbers, even though the bankruptcy laws were jiggered to favor the credit card companies and the lending institutions and not the American consumer. And I get some half-witted parasite who calls this program and tells me everything's fine. Let me tell you something, you jackleg freak. Maybe things are fine for you. And it's poor money management. What the hell are you talking about, money management? How in the hell do you manage $40,000 a year, family of four after taxes? What does that leave? Until a parasite like you comes along and says, well, here, let me show you how to do this. I'll take a percentage. I hate people who live off the blood and sweat and tears of other people. Loan sharks, money managers, hedge fund operators. Screw you people. Why don't you get off your ass and go produce something? Jeez. Armand is calling from Florida. I have no patience with people like that. Armand, welcome to the program.
Please don't leave out the most obnoxious group of humans that ever exhibited on this earth, the billionaires.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are pulling the strings on that little half-assed puppet that was on TV tonight.
Yeah.
And ask these Republicans that still support this monarchist. Ask them when they call you up and say, Mike, ask them directly. Say, tell me right now. You claim you still support him. You tell me right now on this radio program with thousands, if not millions of people listening, you tell us right now that when you voted for this puppet for the rich, that you voted for him to steal your treasury and to steal the blood from your soldiers that's supposed to defend your priorities, not the rich.
But there's a class of people in this country, Armand, who don't give a damn about that.
Wait a minute. Let me finish the question, please.
Sure.
Say, did you consciously, tell me now that you knowingly voted for this puppet to use your treasury and your soldiers to go to a sovereign country and steal their natural resources in their ground and turn it over to the billionaires that put him in office in the oil industry? Tell me you did that right now.
Well, the wealthy in this country would say, hell yes, Malloy.
The Bush supporters.
Well,
we know what the wealthy think, but I mean these morons like this idiot that just called you up. That sounds like he's right out of a cult on lunch break.
Well, he doesn't give a damn about that stuff. As long as there are Americans who are desperate enough to join a military that has been corrupted by these Republicans to go fight to steal another country's natural resources, you'll always have people like my caller, Blake from Texas, who couldn't care less.
And turn it over to the rich.
He doesn't give a damn.
Well, you know what? He's got his starched white shirt and his underwear up his butt, and he's got his Beamer out in the parking lot, and he's making his payment, you know, for his lease. And that's probably the only thing he cares about, but watching those pretty black athletes in tights throw that ball around on the weekend, too.
Jesus, Armand. I got to go. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate your call. You people are getting really rough. You really are. It must be the tone set on this program by the host. I don't know. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. It's about 6:30 past the hour. All right, we have the audio now of Jim Webb's Democratic Party response to the nonsense of George W. Bush tonight. So let's go ahead and play that. Here he is, Senator Jim Webb.
Good evening. I'm Senator Jim Webb from Virginia, where this year we will celebrate the 400th anniversary of the settlement of Jamestown, an event that marked the first step in the long journey that has made us the greatest and most prosperous nation on earth. It wouldn't be possible in this short amount of time to actually rebut the president's message, nor would it be useful. Let me simply say that we in the Democratic Party hope that this administration is serious about improving education and health care for all Americans and addressing such domestic priorities as restoring the vitality of the great city of New Orleans. Further, this is the seventh time the president has mentioned energy independence in a State of the Union message. But for the first time, this exchange is taking place in a Congress led by the Democratic Party. We are looking for affirmative solutions that will strengthen our nation by freeing us from our dependence on foreign oil and spurring a wave of entrepreneurial growth in the form of alternate energy programs. We look forward to working with the President and his party to bring about these changes. There are two areas where our respective parties have largely stood in contradiction, and I want to take a few minutes to address them tonight. The first relates to how we see the health of our economy, how we measure it, and how we ensure that its benefits are properly shared among all Americans. The second regards our foreign policy, how we might bring the war in Iraq to a proper conclusion that will also allow us to continue to fight the war against international terrorism and to address other strategic concerns that our country faces around the world. When one looks at the health of our economy, it's almost as if we're living in two different countries. Some say that things have never been better. The stock market is at an all-time high, and so are corporate profits. But these benefits are not being fairly shared. When I graduated from college, the average corporate CEO made 20 times what the average worker did. Today, it's nearly 400 times. In other words, it takes the average worker more than a year to make the money that his or her boss makes in one day. Wages and salaries for our workers are at all-time lows as a percentage of national wealth, even though the productivity of American workers is the highest in the world. Medical costs have skyrocketed. College tuition rates are off the charts. Our manufacturing base is being dismantled and sent overseas. Good American jobs are being sent along with them. In short, the middle class of this country, our historic backbone, and our best hope for a strong society in the future is losing its place at the table. Our workers know this through painful experience. Our white-collar professionals are beginning to understand it as their jobs start disappearing also. And they expect, rightly, that in this age of globalization, their government has a duty to insist that their concerns be dealt with fairly in the international marketplace. In the early days of our republic, President Andrew Jackson established an important principle of American-style democracy, that we should measure the health of our society not at its apex, but at its base, not with the numbers that come out of Wall Street, but with the living conditions that exist on Main Street. We must recapture that spirit today. Under the leadership of the new Democratic Congress, we're on our way to doing so. The House just passed a minimum wage increase, the first in 10 years, and the Senate will soon follow. We've introduced a broad legislative package designed to regain the trust of the American people. We've established a tone of cooperation and consensus that extends beyond party lines. We're working to get the right things done for the right people and for the right reasons. With respect to foreign policy, this country has patiently endured a mismanaged war for nearly 4 years. Many, including myself, warned even before the war began that it was unnecessary, that it would take our energy and attention away from the larger war against terrorism, and that invading and occupying Iraq would leave us strategically vulnerable in the most violent and turbulent corner of the world. I want to share with all of you a picture that I have carried with me for more than 50 years. This is my father when he was a young Air Force captain flying cargo planes during the Berlin airlift. He sent us the picture from Germany as we waited for him back here at home. When I was a small boy, I used to take the picture to bed with me every night because for more than 3 years my father was deployed, unable to live with us full time, serving overseas or in bases where there was no family housing. I still keep it to remind me of the sacrifices that my mother and others had to make over and over again as my father gladly served our country. I was proud to follow in his footsteps, serving as a Marine in Vietnam. My brother did as well, serving as a Marine helicopter pilot. My son has joined the tradition, now serving as an infantry Marine in Iraq. Like so many other Americans, today and throughout our history, we served and have served not for political reasons, but because we love our country. On the political issues, those matters of war and peace, and in some cases life and death, we trusted the judgment of our national leaders. We hoped that they would be right, that they would measure with accuracy the value of our lives against the enormity of the national interest that might call upon us to go into harm's way. We owe them our loyalty as Americans, and we gave it. But they owed us sound judgment, clear thinking, concern for our welfare, a guarantee that the threat to our country was equal to the price we might be called upon to pay in defending it. The president took us into this war recklessly. He disregarded warnings from the National Security Advisor during the first Gulf War, the Chief of Staff of the Army, two former commanding generals of Central Command, whose jurisdiction includes Iraq, the Director of Operations on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and many, many others with great integrity and long experience in national security affairs. We are now, as a nation, held hostage to the predictable and predicted disarray that has followed. The worst costs to our nation have been staggering financially, the damage to our reputation around the world, the lost opportunities to defeat the forces of international terrorism, and especially the precious blood of our citizens who stepped forward to serve. The majority of the nation no longer supports this war the way this war is being fought, nor does the majority of our military, nor does the majority of Congress. We need a new direction. Not one step back from the war against international terrorism, not a precipitous withdrawal that ignores the possibility of further chaos, but an immediate shift towards strong, regionally based diplomacy, a policy that takes our soldiers off the streets of Iraq's cities, and a formula that will, in short order, allow our combat forces to leave Iraq. On both of these vital issues, our economy and our national security, it falls upon those of us in elected office to take action. Regarding the economic imbalance in our country, I'm reminded of the situation President Theodore Roosevelt faced in the early days of the 20th century. America was then, as now, drifting apart along class lines. The so-called robber barons were unapologetically raking in a huge percentage of the national wealth. The dispossessed workers at the bottom were threatening revolt. Roosevelt spoke strongly against these divisions. He told his fellow Republicans that they must set themselves, quote, as resolutely against improper corporate influence on the one hand as against demagogy and mob rule on the other. And he did something about it. I recall the words of former general and soon-to-be president Dwight Eisenhower during the dark days of the Korean War, which had fallen to a bloody stalemate. When comes the end? Asked the general who had commanded our forces in Europe during World War II. And as soon as he became president, he brought the Korean War to an end. These presidents took the right kind of action for the benefit of the American people and for the health of our relations around the world. Tonight, we're calling on this president to take similar action in both areas. If he does, we will join him. If he does not, we will be showing him the way. Thank you for listening, and God bless America.
Wow. Compare and contrast, huh? What Senator Jim Webb had to say and what Chuckle Nuts had to say. And thanks to our Chief Information Officer, Billy Foster, for getting us that audio. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Rebuild America, keep hope alive.
And now, the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Molloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Regarding misinformed man, well, maybe he wasn't misinformed. The guy that called him from Texas, say he's a money manager, and everything is just fine. Prairie 2 wrote in, regarding the economy, we're $9 trillion in debt. I think we were $6 trillion when Bush took over. We were $1 trillion when Reagan took over. 20 cents of every federal budget dollar is deficit spending. Cities and states are balancing their budgets by selling public assets to foreign companies. Corporations are outsourcing their profit. Corporate income taxes have gone from 50% of all income taxes collected to 7%. And it just goes on and on and on. If the guy that called in here, if he is living the kind of insulated life he claims to be living, fine. But someday the poor people are going to grab him, or the middle class is going to, what's left, are going to grab him and roast him and eat him. You know, just devour him for the protein. And it's a shame that this country has people that operate like that. I'm reasonably sure the guy does not give back anything. I think about what Jim Webb said. He keeps that photograph of his dad to remind him of the sacrifices that his mother and others had to make over and over again
His father served the country. He was a Marine in Vietnam. His brother was a Marine helicopter pilot. His son is in the Marines in Iraq, on and on and on and on. You show me a Republican whose family has that kind of history, and I'll show you someone who is not really a Republican, who's either a liar or a Democrat. As far as health insurance, Bush's plan, I've got a comment on this. Paul Krugman, in yesterday's paper, had a column entitled Gold-Plated Indifference. He talked about how Bush the other day in a state of the, radio address, I guess last week, Bush suggested that we should treat health insurance more like home ownership. Bush went on to say in that speech that the current tax code encourages home ownership by allowing you to deduct the interest on your mortgage from your taxes. He said, we can reform the tax code so that it provides a similar incentive for you to buy health insurance. And Krugman says, those are the words of someone with no sense of what it's like to be uninsured. Krugman says, most people without health insurance have low incomes and just can't afford the premiums. And making premiums tax deductible is almost worthless to workers whose income puts them in a low tax bracket to begin with. Krugman says, of those uninsured who aren't low income, many can't get coverage because of pre-existing conditions. Everything from diabetes to a long ago case of jock itch. Yeah, how is Bush's little tax incentive program, or tax break, another tax cut, how is that going to help people who are denied health insurance by these filthy, blood-sucking health insurance companies? It's not. Bush is a liar. He's a freak. He's like his old man when his old man saw a price scanner at a supermarket. Doesn't know what the hell it is. Krugman says the only people the Bush plan might move out of the ranks of the uninsured are the people we're least concerned about, affluent, healthy Americans who choose voluntarily not to be insured. At most, the Bush plan might induce some of these people to buy insurance while in the process, well, what do you know, giving many other high-income individuals yet another tax break. Krugman writes, while proposing this high-end tax break, Mr. Bush is also proposing a tax increase, not on the wealthy, but on workers who, he thinks, have too much health insurance. The tax code, he said, quote, unwisely encourages workers to choose overly expensive gold-plated plans. The result is that insurance premiums rise and many Americans cannot afford the coverage they need, end quote. Jesus, look at the condescension in that statement. Krugman says, well, all those who think they have gold-plated health insurance coverage, please raise their hands. He says, what's driving all this is the theory, popular in conservative circles, but utterly at odds with the evidence, that the big problem with U.S. health care is that people have too much insurance, that there would be large cost savings if people were forced to pay more of their medical expenses out of pocket. My God. See, this is what these blood-sucking, filthy, degenerate health insurance plans are trying to do. Reduce the pool of insured people who really need it. Let them pay out of pocket. God, how did this happen? Krugman winds up by saying, what's really striking about Mr. Bush's remarks, however, is the tone. The stuff about providing incentives to buy insurance, the sneering description of good coverage as gold-plated, it's all right-wing think tank jargon. In the past, Mr. Bush's speechwriters might have found less offensive language. Now they're not even trying to hide his fundamental indifference to the plight of less fortunate Americans. Yeah, this bastard needs to be impeached.
My heart is very tender, although my parts are awful raw. You might have been infected, but you never were a boy. I'm dying from your love, my love. I'm your spiral keto clown. I've left my body to science, but I'm afraid they've turned it down. Gonna call you.
Here's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Crazy, but that's how it goes. Any of the people,
6 before the hour. Got an email here from Rick in Mesa, Arizona. He writes, hi, Michael. Watching the State of the Union, I noticed that Darth Cheney was laboring from the repetitive standing. He had a rather unfocused red face. At about 24 minutes after the hour, he reached down and then popped something into his mouth. I had just pointed Dickie's ill appearance out to my wife when this pill-popping incident happened. Being a pharmacist, my wife suggested that he had just taken a nitroglycerin tablet. I thought to myself, well, this will be more expedient but less gratifying than an impeachment. Oh, God. Perhaps it was only a lozenge, but the drama helped me endure the idiot-in-chief's ramblings while waiting for Webb's response. That would be something, wouldn't it? Every time they will take him someplace and let him suck blood down. I've noticed this about Cheney. I realize that's not a prescriptive solution to heart trouble, is a blood transfusion. As a matter of fact, it might even hurt more than help. But what I've noticed about Cheney, whenever he gets that pale, peaked, lean and hungry look, lean as far as Cheney is concerned, because he is kind of bloated. And he doesn't look like a heavyset man. He looks like a bloated man. There's a difference. But anytime he gets that pale look, you know, he'll disappear for a while. He just disappear. You don't see him. And then he'll come back and he's all pink-cheeked and rosy-looking, a bounce to his step, as if he has been infused with somehow, either through his fangs or intravenously, he's been infused with blood. It's very strange, very creepy. Very weird. Very Cheney. Back to your phone calls. Victor is calling from Indiana. Victor, welcome to the program. Thanks for your patience.
Hi, Mike. Hey. I'm listening to you on Sirius, and I got to tell you, I love your show. And
thank you.
I've never heard a radio show host with so much passion like yours.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. Thank you.
I do have a question, however. I've been listening to this idiot mumbling every day about different things and press conferences and such. But the one thing that keeps bothering me, what is the definition of victory that he's referring to on a daily basis?
That's a good question. I think,
and nobody, not in a single interview that I watched, that I listened to on the radio, anybody asked him, Mr. President, at which point do we say, okay, we're set, we're done, let's get on a helicopter and fly home?
Yeah.
What is the, you know, what is the point of victory that he's talking about so much? We can't lose. We can't. If we don't know what victory is, how do we know when we're losing, when we're winning? What is it, you know?
Well,
I'm just confused.
Yeah, as is most of the people who still have a brain who try to understand what he's talking about. I think victory to this guy means when the oil fields are truly secured, they don't care about anything other than the oil fields. I don't care how he tries to couch it. I think that's clearly obvious. But as far as the rhetoric, I don't know. You know, I watched David Petraeus today at the hearings, the new guy who's going to go in and try to clean up the mess, the lieutenant general. I guess he'll get his fourth star if he takes this, if he gets confirmed, he will be a full general. And what he was saying is obviously he didn't have an answer either. I mean, nobody seems to have an answer of what constitutes victory. We've overthrown their government. We have turned their country into a slaughterhouse. We have executed their dictator. We have forced them to write a constitution along the lines that we demanded. We have forced them to elect a toy parliament, the 12 million that Bush talks about. I don't know what else we are supposed to do. We didn't do this to the Germans. We didn't do this to the Japanese.
No,
I don't think we've done this to anybody. So I have no idea what this rat bastard's talking about.
And it's the only war that I can think of is the World War II. And you know, we knew then when we take the Berlin, the Hitler was gone, and that's it. You know, we just pretty much part of the Germany was given to Western world, part of the Germany was taken by Russians, and that was it. And everybody went home.
If
and
I...
now, we don't even know what the victory is and what the people are dying for.
I hear you, Victor. If I can come up with something, I'll
Well, thank you very much, and I'll keep listening to you.
All right,
you have a wonderful night.
Thanks, Victor. I appreciate it. You know, this definition of victory has been there never was any victory other than the securing of the oil fields and the establishment of military bases, U.S. military bases, in that sad, phony country. That's what it's been. But for public consumption, you know, what are we supposed to think? What's the mission? How long? How do we know when it's accomplished? On the day it's accomplished, is the American general in charge of forces there? In this case, it'll be Petraeus. Is it to be the day when he can ride through any street in any city in Iraq in an open jeep without being assassinated? Would that be the day? Because that day will never come. Never, ever, ever, ever. As long as there are foreign troops in Iraq, there will be bloodshed. Even after the Sunnis and the Shia settle this deep, abiding hatred that they have for each other, that the Bush crime family refuses to acknowledge, even after that's gone, if the Shia and the Sunni could get together right now, which it surprises me that they can't, if we were invaded by a foreign country, I think whatever factions exist in the United States would work together to throw them out, except the Republicans. The Republicans in the United States would turn turncoat and try to assist the invaders. We know that. But the rest of America, Jew, Gentile, Protestant, Catholic, liberal, conservative, Democrat, black, white, gay, straight, we would all work together. The only people who would cooperate with an invading force would be Republicans. But as far as Iraq is concerned, as long as there are American troops there, we might as well have huge bullseyes painted on the helmets and the backpacks of our soldiers, because the Iraqis, you see, it's their freaking country. It's their country. We are the invader. I don't care how you want to couch it. Bush can talk about democracy until his ass falls off. We are an invader. We have attacked another country for absolutely no reason, and we did it back in 1992, or when was it, 91, I'm sorry, when Pappy Bush was trying to save, or trying to get his worthless ass reelected. That's the only reason we went into Iraq the first time, was so Pappy Bush could get reelected and prevent the election of Bill Clinton. This country has been murdered by the United States since 1991. Absolutely murdered, raped, dismembered, burned, destroyed, salted with depleted uranium, utterly and absolutely flayed, tortured, executed, beheaded, slaughtered. Somebody tell me, what, 14 years, what's the definition of victory? We have reduced the country to a point where the people can't even turn on the goddamn lights. They don't have food. They don't have potable water. They don't have anything. Nothing. And still, no, the one thing they do have is a determination that they're not going to die. They're not going to disappear. And they will kill each other and the invader until they decide that they've had enough. It makes absolutely no difference what Bush or Clinton or Bush 1 or Joe Schmo or Abe Snake or anybody else who happens to come along and determines to keep this going. It doesn't make any difference. The Iraqis, like the Americans, like the Vietnamese, like the Chinese, like the Brits, like any nationalistic group, will continue to fight until the filthy, stinking invader is gone. That is the nature of human beings. Jesus Christ, why can't they understand this? If it happened in this country, again, the only people who would turn tail and collaborate with the enemy would be Republicans. Everybody else would fight until the last man and woman was dead. Bush doesn't care about the troops or the innocents we're killing in Iraq. He doesn't know. Petraeus doesn't know. You and I don't even know who the so-called enemy is anymore, and we're still sending in the troops. Are we fighting the Shia?
That's what Muqtada al-Assad, whatever the hell he is. That's what the Mahdi army is. The only army, Iraqi army that is workable in Iraq is the Mahdi army that is run by Muqtada al-Sadr. He's a Shia. The most effective murder machine in Iraq, other than the U.S. military, are the Sunni. Are we fighting the Shia, the Sunni? Is Maliki even on our side? Or whatever that side is. Even Bush tonight admitted there are Shia extremists and Sunni extremists. And yet we're supposed to keep funneling troops into this bloody mess? How are the American troops embedded with the Iraqis going door to door supposed to know who to shoot? This is sick. This is disgusting. This is George Bush. This is Republicanism.
On your TV, the cable TV, the liar speaks tonight.
Ten before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight. A lot of fancy dancing necessary to bring that State of the Union live and the response. And we also, a shout-out to the affiliates down the way who also gave us the time to do that tonight. We do appreciate it. Ian also answered your calls. Thanks, Ian. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Do we not mention Ben Birch anymore? We do. Ben Birch, who is... what the hell does he do? He gets it up. At novamradio.com, right? He archives it, but at novamradio.com. That's right. Okay. Well, I guess we still credit Ben. Catherine Bay is our executive producer. Oh, and for those of you who have been sending me emails about our 2.5-year-old Molly, we have new pictures up in the gallery finally at mikemalloy.com. Thanks to Mark Marshall, who you woke him up tonight, told him to put him up, right? Pictures from this fall and winter of young Miss Molly. So you can go to MikeMalloy.com, go to the gallery, and look at the new pictures of Molly, if you like. Also, please visit NovaMradio.com and sign up for downloads and podcasts. Be a founding member of this network. We need you, and what you get in return makes it well worth the $9 or $10 a month. Or $100 a year that is the cost involved. So check it out, okay? The Jim Webb response will be up there tonight if you missed it under audio highlights. This is from Joe in London, England. Hi, Michael. Listen to the State of the Union address, and it's basically the same window dressing BS that was made in the last one. What really annoyed me was that 1 week after the last State of the Union, he cut all the budgets for alternative energy research. Now he's talking about alternative fuel sources, but by the sound of it, he refers to hydrocarbon alternatives. The trouble with this is that the burning of all hydrocarbon fuels produce carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas that will continue to aid global warming. Alternative hydrocarbon fuels are not the answer. The only clean source of power is electricity. It's time to make the people aware of this and put this in the public domain. It is the sort of information that Republicans don't publicize. Yeah. Well, Bush is not interested in alternative fuel. This is, well, like you said, it's window dressing, it's lies, it's nonsense. Utter nonsense. Back to your phone calls. Virginia is calling from Alameda, California. Hey, Virginia.
Hey, sweetie. Good to hear you live, since we don't get you live normally on Air America in the Bay Area, but it's wonderful at last. And what didn't he talk about today? Oh, bombing Somalia, people hungry, standing in lines at food banks. Told Mr. Money Manager that the dollar is at a 15-year low in the foreign exchange, and he is going to be tarred and feathered right out of town real soon. Don't even worry about it.
All right.
But yeah, we have hunger. We have this nonsense, you know, don't sue the bastards who make you sick and crippled so you can't earn a living and you can live in poverty begging food banks for the rest of your life. Yeah, no, we can't sue them. They can cripple us, they can maim us, but the doctors just keep on running. And if anything, we should have tax deductions for the rich so we can pay more insurance companies, so more doctors can maim more people, so more people can't work, so more people are standing at the food banks. But that's not even a subject. And the homelessness, we won't worry about that, and we won't worry about the record number of foreclosures, and we won't worry about that no one can even buy a set of sheets anymore because they have no equity left in their house.
Well, you know, to some people, what you're describing, it just doesn't exist in their universe, and since it doesn't exist or they choose not to see it, it doesn't exist anywhere. And it's crazy when I hear people talk about how good this economy is. Oh, hell yeah, for certain people, this is the best economy. This is like the bad old days, like Jim Webb pointed out, the turn of the 20th century that Theodore Roosevelt warned about, that every president in the history of this nation has warned about, this separation, economic separation, an utter, absolute, upper class, and then the rest of us down here struggling for what's left. That sows the seeds of revolution, period.
That's the only reason that there is so much, finally, so much resistance to Bush. And another thing no one ever bothers to discuss, make Israel join the non-proliferation treaty. Let's have a discussion about their nuclear weapons. Let's finally have something about that region that's honest, that's above board. We all know they have the nukes. How can we negotiate with anybody as long as we keep denying that they have them? It is so ludicrous. It is so obscene. The $86,000 that dear Miss Clinton got from AIPAC and all those people, I'm tired of it. We're never going to get a change.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to change. It doesn't matter how many people you put out there. Oh, everybody needs to read Daniel Ellsberg's Secrets, the memoirs of the Pentagon Papers. If you want to see exactly line, quote, and line and scripture of every kind of machination that is going on, including sending the troops out there before they even tell us they're going to do it. We do not need. And PBS was outraged. I mean, the people, the little talking heads they had on there, were blown away that Webb was so in your face. They expected compromise. I'm so glad MoveOn.org and I and so many people helped get that man elected and voted in. We need this change. We need nuclear. We need the nuclear non-proliferation treaty. You know, I'm reading that India is sitting there cutting deals with Iran. We traded nukes with them for mangoes or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was mangoes. Or no, was that India? What did we get from Afghanistan? Opium, that's right. Pomegranates from Afghanistan, that's right.
Oh, Lord have mercy. And the drug war, do you know that all of the opium can be made legal because we have... And we would not have to pay so much for, what is it called, morphine?
Yeah.
There are so many nations that have no access to morphine, and they want to criminalize opium in Afghanistan so that they cannot reduce the price of morphine in the market. I am sick to death of it. Those
Virginia,
people should just be making a living.
Virginia, we live in a house of mirrors. Thanks for checking in. I got to go. I appreciate it. Take care.
All right. You take care. Love you, Mike.
All right. We'll talk again. Thanks, everybody, for participating tonight. Please go to NovamRadio.com. Become a founding member of this network, okay? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.